Yeah, all it's right, working.
Cool. All right, we're back.
We're back. I'm on the levels.
I'm doing DJ Dash.
Skirt. sounding really good. Coming in nice and clear.
Yeah. I got some rugs, so the acoustics
are better. I can
improved.
Tell.
Yeah.
As an audiophile,
less tinny,
a pedophile. I can tell. The rugs are great. They're your childhood rugs.
Yeah, they're my rugs that I bought at IKEA 20 years ago, like back when they had like a Pier 1 import style, like eclectic,
yeah,
import thing going on.
When they
could get like crazy war rugs and shit,
right.
So that's cool.
They're cute.
Yeah, they're not bad.
What else is new? How are you, Anna?
I'm the same.
Yeah. How about that inauguration, huh?
Didn't watch it.
Well, I thought it started at noon, but yeah. I guess noon is kind of the official switchover.
Yeah.
So at like 11:55, I tuned in and I saw Sloppy Joe doing his thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I guess.
Crime Bill Joe.
missed it.
Wait, it starts at 9, right? It goes from 9 to 12.
What?
I think so, yeah.
That's so long.
Which is wrong to ask people to tune in so early.
LA, that's 6 a.m. Are they not supposed to participate at
yeah.
all? It's not reasonable.
Yeah, I don't know. But it seemed pretty fake and gay on the whole.
Lady Gaga performed, I guess?
Yeah.
Okay.
What did she do? Like Bad Romance?
I missed. I saw the Youth Poet Laureate.
Uh-huh.
Not a very good poem, gotta say.
What was the nature of the poem? I meant to look into this, but then I was distracted by all the discourse about her like $600 headband and $4,000 blazer gown thing.
Oh, she looked cute.
I think she looked cute. And I also I hate my least favorite discourse that exists is the one where they're like, oh, she's supposed to be a representative of the people, but she's wearing $10,000 worth of clothing. It's like a special occasion and she probably borrowed the clothing.
And she's not a representative of the people. She's a poet.
Yeah.
And
yeah. But like she's in like a cultural capacity for like a political. I remember when this happened with AOC on the cover of Vanity Fair, and this is one of the few times I'll defend her. It's like, you know, she literally, some stylist borrowed clothing to dress her. It's not like she personally purchased $10,000 worth of clothing.
Right.
That she then smugly rubbed in everybody's faces. It's not how it works.
Yeah. At the inaug, I don't know. I mean, the whole inauguration is too expensive.
Yeah.
Right? It's, the whole thing is a overpriced spectacle, basically, for...
How much
does
this thing cost?
Like, I don't know, $100 million, a gajillion bucks or something.
I mean, it looks like shit.
Looks like shit, not worth it. Yeah. Personally, I just prefer my poets to smoke cigarettes and stuff, and she didn't do any of that.
She should have, like, lit up. Should have been Azalea Banks.
It was a very, like, forgettable kind of lyrical, fluid poem about, like, how we were reaching up towards progress and blah blah blah,
slouching toward Bethlehem.
Exactly.
They should have wheeled Joan Didion out on one of those like Home Depot dollies and like Celine glasses. She's not a poet, but her writing has more poetry in it than most professional poets.
That's true.
Poems these days.
Yeah. Did you read that Didion interview?
I did. I feel like Rupi Kaur was really slighted this time around.
Yeah, maybe next year. Well, her poems are so short.
Yeah.
They're all like...
Yes, Queen. Biden won. Go, Kamala. Yeah, I mean...
They should have let me do it. Read some of my net art poems from 2013.
Yeah, I don't know. Everybody looked like shit. I thought Kamala and Dr. Jill looked like crap. I complained about it.
And the jewel tones.
Yeah. I hate jewel tones.
Me too.
There's nothing more offensive than jewel tones is visually, and nothing more offensive verbally than like the phrase jewel tones.
White people especially don't look so great in jewel tones.
Yeah, that's true.
Was at a fitting last week trying on many fabulous gowns, not to brag. And one of them was like, yeah, like a jewel tone, like emerald green.
Yeah.
And I like couldn't even look at myself in the mirror because it like made me look so sallow and fucked up.
Yeah, this is like, that's what I hate about award shows, because they'll put like Amy Adams or Nicole Kidman in an emerald green dress because they have red hair and it just looks so on the nose and tacky.
Yeah.
Like she's really rocking those jewel tones on the red carpet. Like, no, she's not.
It's definitely not my palette.
Yeah, it's the worst. It's I'm a Kohl's Cash palette.
What color do you think you look best in?
Like Burka blue. Totally. Oh no, I'm kidding.
Adderall like blue.
Totally covered up. Like a slit for the eyes. No, I don't know. I mean, I look pretty decent in red, I think. Weirdly. Yeah,
you look nice in red and pink.
I'm like bright colors, which sucks because I actually hate bright colors. I like muted tones better. I think you look really good in like that sage green color
palette.
What's that? Chartreuse? Is that the color I'm looking for?
Well, the shirt I'm wearing right now is like an ochre.
Yes.
Which is like what my favorite color world, basically. But I like red as well because it looks nice with my blonde hair.
Yeah, red is good. I like blondes and black and brunettes and white.
Yeah, well said.
Yeah, but like, I don't know, but both of them looked horrible and the silhouettes are really hideous too. Like, it was kind of like a bowling pin silhouette.
Yeah,
they just like looked nervous and shabby, like kind of like provincial church ladies or something.
Kamala should really bring back her like 90s prosecutor lip liner look.
Yeah,
she should definitely lean into more of a authoritarian look because we all know she's thinking it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was like thinking how nothing will be worse than like the wrath unleashed by us on us by this woman who kind of won a hollow representational victory on a technicality, like because she has so much compensating to do.
Yeah,
she's gonna be like overcorrecting every step of the way.
Imposter syndrome.
Yeah, sure. Imposter syndrome must be like off the chain.
Can't relate.
Yeah, and I was also like thinking like another thing that dawned on me is like, I actually am a libtard in this way, and I like the idea of representation, especially for this country. And I feel like, you know, I'm not opposed to the idea of having a kind of black woman president. I think that's a good and inspirational idea in principle or in theory, but this is the most corrupt and immoral way to go about it. And it's going to have like a lot of like karmic aftershocks.
Yeah. I'd love to see colors of Benetton ads, multicultural government cabinet, but
yeah, no skin off my back.
I feel pretty checked out already.
Yeah, I think that was the strategy. That's what they want.
They wanted to break me down, and it worked. So good for them. Now I'm mostly into retinol.
Oh yeah, how's that going?
Really good. My face feels incredibly dry,
yeah,
but in a way like it's like I'm kind of molting like a lizard.
Yeah,
and I'll have like beautiful amphibian skin underneath.
Yeah I mean I think it's worth it. I received many messages from people who thank me for trap pilling them, but it's not really to my credit. I owe all credit to a young lady from the subreddit.
Really? That's how you found out about
it. I've told this story before. Yeah. She was like, I was being kind of like, I don't know. And she was like, no, listen up, you dumb bitch. This will change your life. And she was right. But she looks great. I follow her on Instagram now. So
okay, I'll get that follow from you later. New York's first retinol podcast.
Sponsored by retinol. I don't care if it causes birth defects or
I think that's Accutane.
No, all vitamin A stuff does.
Really?
Yeah.
I bet with the topical, though, it's negligible.
Yeah, because it probably doesn't, like, penetrate to the bloodstream.
I mean, I'm sure it does a little, but the way that, like, deodorant or sunscreen or anything else that we, like, apply to ourselves gets absorbed into our body.
Yeah, that's true.
But I feel like it's... Because Accutane, I remember, I knew kids in high school who took it, and on the, like, pill packs, they had, like, a pregnant lady, like, crossed out.
Yeah, but doesn't Accutane also bring about suicidal ideation?
Yeah, the Columbine kids were on it.
Oh, really?
I don't know why that is. I think, yeah, teens are just out of control. Their hormones are, like, and synapses are misfiring constantly, and if you start tweaking with it, it just all goes haywire.
Yeah. You try to fix your acne, and pretty soon you're getting like a semi-automatic weapon.
School shooter. Yeah.
And bringing it to the inauguration. what else happened? I watched a few snippets of the Biden speech, and I saw like Chris Wallace or somebody tweeting about how this speech rivals that of JFK's speeches. And I was like, politics aside, it was very much like a copy paste job.
Yeah.
It also sounded like a weird like slam poetry session where he was just like, you know, throwing keywords and buzzwords.
Yeah, he's just trying to like evoke Obama era nostalgia.
Yeah.
With his cadence or something. It was, yeah, he didn't say anything memorable or that interesting. Kamala's stepdaughter.
Oh, yeah.
Is from Bushwick, it turns out.
Wait, really?
No, but she looks like it. She looks like a textile artist with like stick and pokes.
Yeah.
Pansexual, wore a Miu Miu coat, lots of people pointed out, pretty fugly in my opinion.
The
also
coat.
Yeah,
I would have to look this. What was the coat? Was it like with one of the sporty collection ones?
No, it was I think it was upcycled from a few seasons ago. Okay. Or maybe last season. What's her name? Ella,
I don't know.
Ella M. Hoff. I'm pulling up a pic for you. Yeah, it was this kind of like Peter Pan collar with a little bit, a little overworked, like some of the Miu Miu stuff often is.
I'm not exactly a fan, but I'm not outraged either.
And she wore a Bat Shiva dress underneath, which was cute.
Wow. That's so, there's something so deeply corrupt and immoral about wearing twee indie girl brands to an inauguration.
Meet Ella M. Hoff, the U.S. presidential inauguration's breakout fashion star. Yeah, people are really stanning her hard because she looks like people they know.
Yeah.
she
like looks like a girl who stole drugs from your apartment.
She looks like a girl who Me Too'd John Raffin. She looks like she's from Montreal.
Yeah, I hope she like shaved her armpits for this, but she probably didn't.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
But they weren't exposed, so
I think the most painful thing about this new era that we're entering is going to be people like stanning unworthy losers, because that's all we have. Like I saw somebody circulating a playlist inspired by Janet Yellen.
Who's Janet Yellen?
She's like Biden's new secretary of something.
All politics is sexual pathology.
She's the treasury secretary.
Okay.
But she is, you know, another one of these like plundering gerontocrats, and they were like, back in a couple of months ago, people were saying like, I think Biden said like we should have a Hamilton style musical about Janet Yellen. And I was thinking like we have such a weird bipolar culture, because there's like zero respect for elders, but yet we worship like octogenarians in power or whatever. Yeah. And it's like, because they, you know, as somebody else pointed out, they, you know, you don't have utility as an old person who's like an ordinary normie citizen.
Right.
But if you're part of the ruling class, they'll just like worship you forever. Oh yeah. Larry King died.
Oh yeah. R.I.P. I guess.
The Ruth Bader Ginsburg of men. Well, now that Larry and Ruth are gone, I think Didion's like the only one holding it down for low BMI elders.
Wow. Yeah.
She's the only one who's like under 100 pound elders.
That Didion interview was charming.
Yeah, it was cute.
She seems characteristically
nonplussed,
like a huge bitch.
Yeah. I'm a little bit, personally, I feel a little bit kind of like annoyed by her ongoing position of being too cool for school, but I have to respect Didion because she is like a national treasure, and I think she made a lot of good points in this interview. Actually, I've never seen anybody make so many good points while saying so little, you know.
Yeah, brevity.
Yeah, this was an interview in Time magazine.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of can't believe they got Caitlin her. Phillips said this. No, that they ran it.
Why? Because it was
because it's so like it seems like she is clearly doesn't want to be talking to them.
Yeah,
and doesn't, you know, is seems pretty bored.
I'm shocked. Yeah, that like I'm also shocked that she agreed to do it.
Someone said, what would you say? The one of the questions was, what would you say to the millions who have lost loved ones in the past year? And she said, I don't know. I don't know that there's anything to say. Do you fear death? No. Well, yes, of course.
That was great. No, I wrote down that question too, where she was like, I don't know. I don't really have anything to say. Cause it's like, she's like pushing back against their like narrativizing bullshit. This is how they introduced the interview. Her resume is the stuff of legends. From launching her career as a college senior by winning an essay contest sponsored by Vogue, which landed her a job at the magazine, to writing one of the first major pieces that cast doubt on the guilt of the since exonerated Central Park Five. And it's like, well, this is all great, of course, but this is all deliberately like feminist, anti-racist bullshit mm-hmm. that they're spinning now. It's like her greatest intellectual contribution, no doubt, is like calling bullshit on surgically taking apart feminism and radicalism.
Right.
She really nailed that. Nobody else since then has really done it in such a kind of majestic way.
Yeah. Do you think she was a Republican?
I don't know.
I mean, we know she's a Republican, but I guess I'm wondering if she was a Trump supporter. Probably not.
I think she probably doesn't care at this point. Yeah. And why should she?
Right.
And I also really like her philosophy that you shouldn't care about what somebody like she thinks about kind of like political stuff. Like she even says that about the Central Park Five. She's like,
yeah. How did she feel about them being exonerated? And she said, however I felt about it didn't get me or them very far, anything very far. Yeah. Well said.
And she's like very kind of lucid and honest in this way, which I appreciate.
Yeah, I think she's exhausted.
Yeah.
She hasn't eaten any food since the 90s. So.
Since the 60s.
Yeah. She had an iceberg wedge salad in 95, and she hasn't eaten since.
I was just like confused by one point of the interview where she says her wine bills have gone down. How? Don't most people's wine bills go up?
I think she meant because she's not entertaining.
Oh, I see.
She's not hosting.
I see.
And once again, with that low BMI, she's probably not downing very much wine herself.
Yeah, she could probably get drunk off of like a shot glass of wine. Enviable, commendable.
Yeah.
And I like that the photo they ran of hers from 2011, but she probably still looks like that now. Like she's looked like that since like 1980.
She's so cute.
Yeah, she is really cute. But yeah, what else did they say in this awful interview or like awkward interview? It's cool that they have to give, like, they basically have to give her space as kind of like a legacy figure. And she can be as bitchy and honest as she wants to be, and they can't really blacklist her.
Yeah, she's got nothing to lose.
Yeah, and she's also like sufficiently, like, she's like oblique enough that she, like, I don't know, some of her answers were like, basically dripping with contempt for the interviewer, but she can get away with it.
Yeah, on account of her anorexic mystique.
Yeah, I would be annoyed too if I was, what is she, 86? She's almost 90.
Yeah.
And some millennial interviewer was like, how do you feel about the casualties of COVID and Trump's assault on civil liberties?
What does it mean to you to be called the voice of your generation? I don't have the slightest idea. I'd love to hear the transcript of this.
I know. has she even ever been called the voice of her generation? I don't think that was like a construct that was.
I think, yeah, like slouching towards Bethlehem.
I see.
Because she was the first sort of skeptic of the hippie free love movement.
I see.
But I don't know. Her generation being people in their 90s now.
Yeah, that's true. COVID comorbidities. I like that, like, you know, and they also were like, their introductory paragraph was like longer than the interview itself. Yeah. And they were like, she won a National Book Award, was a finalist for a Pulitzer Prize for a searing book, The Year of Magical Thinking, on the most delicate and timeless subject, grief, fusing journalistic observation with wrenching personal history. She shopped for Linda Kasabian. She interviewed a five-year-old high in LSD. She starred in a Celine ad as an octogenarian. And it's like this kind of like, she told her story and she like refuses to tell her story actually. It's awesome. It's like pretty cool.
It's rare.
Yeah. They're trying to like slot her into this kind of like feminist confessional paradigm. I mean, I guess she did a bit of that with her books, but it's nice that she refuses to like allow that to be like representative of like female experience in general.
Yeah, she's very, even The Year of Magical Thinking, I think is very kind of, it's actually not a great book about grief because I think that she is very like invulnerable. Mm-hmm. And she is a great writer and has such a wonderful style, but she almost like uses it to shield herself, you know, like the stylistic aspects of The Year of Magical Thinking, I think sort of obscure the reality of grief.
Yeah, I would agree with that. She's very like prickly and dignified and unattainable.
Yeah, she's definitely not like, even in her autobiographical works, being very confessional, I think.
Yeah, like she always keeps you at arm's length and withholds a bit, which honestly is an attractive quality. Mm-hmm. And more people, more women especially, should consider adopting it.
I know.
Because I think a lot, I mean, again, this is like my beef with like Joan Didion's impersonators, is that they want to be unattainable, especially like sexually unattainable. They want to be like attractive in that way, but they haven't earned it. You have to really earn it. Mm-hmm. By like putting the kibosh on the amount of information that you allow to leave about you, and you have to be very selective in what you reveal about yourself.
I'm going to play it real close to the vest next time we do an interview. I'm going to be like, how do you guys meet? I'm going to be like, I don't remember.
It's hard to say.
It's hard to say. Bernie, speaking of octogenarians.
Oh yeah, is he an octogenarian? How old is Bernie?
He's in his late 70s. I don't think he's on the cusp, but how do you feel about the Bernie Mittens meme?
It's fine.
I think it's a little depressing.
Yeah, it's sad. I think it's like
feels a little bit like a slap in the face.
Yeah, I retweet or like I storied some Bernie meme that somebody like photoshopped into that ISIS mm-hmm. selfie of me and then instantly regretted it.
I probably shared some.
Yeah.
At least in my like text messages. Sure. I mean, he looks very cute. The mittens are nice. He's wearing his classic one coat.
Yeah.
That he always wears. But yeah, it does feel like now that he's been completely sort of disempowered mm-hmm. and poses zero threat to the liberal establishment, arguably maybe he never did, mm-hmm. Everyone feels comfortable to sort of hold him up as a beloved grumpy meme. It's so mm-hmm. like, it's elder abuse.
It is, yeah.
And it's I feel bad for him,
yeah,
to be kind of reduced to this lazy grumpy old man memification process.
Yeah, and now I'm seeing, of course, this meme, and a lot of people are doing this is what they took from you, this is what you could have had. And it's like, that's not what happened. Bernie completely fell in line with the party machine, and it was obviously destined to be that way. And like, now he's being resuscitated as a kind of resistance figure. And I think just the memeing in general is disturbing. I know that I have like no legs to stand on here, and it's annoying and corny, but the memes themselves are like a colossal distraction.
Of course. Yeah.
And that's like, I don't know. I'm also like of that age group that I'm like literally aging out of, like deriving much pleasure enjoyment from memes. But yeah, that's,
well, this one is especially low effort, you know.
And it's like, you know, this kind of like interpretive thing that people do where they want to read in a kind of intention and meaning into like Bernie sitting there huddled in his like barber jacket or whatever. And it's like, I mean, he's 81 or whatever and was probably just cold.
Yeah.
And mildly annoyed by the circumstances.
I know.
It's like very bleak. He was probably the most fashionable one at the inauguration.
True.
Considering that Melania was not in attendance. Yeah. I thought Melania looked great in her farewell message.
Yeah, she's been looking good these last few months, for sure.
I'm going to miss her a lot.
I'm really going to miss her, actually. And I'm, you know, goes without saying, going to miss Trump.
Yeah.
He really made me laugh a lot.
Yeah. Well, I wonder how he's doing now. It's funny. This is what I wanted to say, that like... you know, it's somewhat annoying and insulting that the fashion media like ignored Melania for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And then the minute that she's out, they start up with their hero worship of like the women of Washington again, mm-hmm. Dr. Jill, Kamala, Michelle Obama was like dusted off and brought back.
Get her
the
in
dead.
A Vogue cover.
Yeah. In her like head to toe. I guess she was wearing jewel tones. Maroon is a jewel tone, right?
I guess. Yeah.
I mean, Michelle looks fine, but it's always like so try hard with her.
I know.
And so overrated.
I mean, she's not a beautiful woman.
Careful. You said it, not me. Honestly, the most hate I've ever gotten is saying that Michelle Obama is like overrated.
I mean, she doesn't need, I also don't, people are also talking about the redhead, the new like press secretary, and comparing her to like Trump's bimbos, excluding Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Yeah. And it's like, oh, I don't, you know, I don't ultimately care if Michelle Obama is beautiful or not, or if the press secretary is beautiful or not. It's not a conversation that I'm particularly interested in having.
Yeah. But I respect and appreciate about Melania that she always had this Didion-esque energy.
Yes.
Where she did
ice cold.
Yeah. She was ice cold. And fiercely loyal, even though she probably hates her husband and wants to divorce him.
Yeah.
And like,
she didn't ask for this.
Yeah, she didn't ask for this. And she always saved face. Oh, but this is the other thing that I wanted to say. So a friend of the pod, Eleanor, had the best take on the Melania drama, because Hagee and I were complaining that Melania was unfairly rejected and shafted by the fashion press. And she was like, no, 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 no. She rejected them because she's too smart to hang with those losers. And I was like, never thought of that. But this could all be like a major kind of like PR psyop on her end to look like kind of the victim of like provincial American fashion people when she preemptively rejected them.
That's interesting. I think, yeah.
I'm not. You know, yeah, I think it's a,
I don't think she was like aspiring to be a beloved first lady for sure. I don't think she was angling for it. I think she would have been happy to have a discreet run as FLOTUS.
Yeah.
But I definitely don't think that they were, you know, eager to give her good press or any kind of even fluff kind of fashion press. I don't think she was offered a Vogue cover or profile or anything, but I definitely think if she had wanted to, she could have made herself more visible and more vocal. But I just don't think,
She and Tulsi are the most like criminally underserved and underrepresented women in politics.
For sure.
Like, you can do a lot with both of them.
Well, Marianne wasn't even in that. At least Tulsi was in that, in the primaries when they kind of made all the politicians take humiliating photos together. But Marianne is also not really in politics.
No, I know, but she's, I would love to see a Vogue cover with Melania or Tulsi or Marianne before I see one with Kamala.
I know.
Like they would look so fierce. I apologize for using
Melania's
that word.
Melania is a professional model. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other two have that kind of like sense of like, I don't know what you call it, like sense of self that's like good at like understanding their angles or whatever. What else happened? I don't know. Do you feel optimistic? Probably not.
No. I mean, not really. It's hard to. I feel kind of fatigued and indifferent mostly.
Yeah.
Biden said he wants to open schools in 100 days or something.
Uh-huh.
He's doing the same thing Cuomo did, where now that Trump is gone, they can kind of reaffirm the Trumpian line of reopening the economy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is my thing. In the months leading up to the election, there was a lot of speculating and theorizing that a Biden win might be preferable just technically because it would put a damper on all the woke stuff.
Yeah.
And I rejected that theory then and reject it now, but...
You think they'll become emboldened
with the woke stuff? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, already we're seeing it. Like, but what I'm hoping for is that it will put a damper on all the COVID stuff, and they're gonna kind of culturally appropriate the Trump MAGA line and start opening up the economy. Mm-hmm. And I think revisiting some of their findings and being like, "Hey, guys, we radically overshot this. Actually, COVID is just like the flu."
Yeah. Like, I mean, that would be nice.
Where there's already been like a kind of small leak of like medical journals publishing papers to that extent. And they were just, I mean, you know, it's very telling that Amazon waited until the moment Trump was gone to offer to help distribute the vaccine and that sort of thing.
Right.
It's all like politicized, but at this point, like, I'd rather be like pragmatic, because it's really depressing living under kind of,
yeah, I'm willing to part with some of my liberties and freedoms just to not have to be so oppressed by COVID anymore.
Not to wear a mask.
Yeah.
And it's not even just
they can have it.
It's not even the strictures that are in place or the guidelines, it's like kind of the indefinite nature of them.
Exactly.
And you think of like all the children that have grown up like in the last, I mean, it's been like what, almost 2 years now?
No. It hasn't even been a year.
Oh, okay. Oops.
It was like, we locked down in March of last year.
Oh yeah.
So we're coming back.
So it's
going to
be a year, but I mean.
So the kids will be fine. It's not ideal. But I don't think they'll, you know, depending on how long, you know, this goes on, I don't think they'll sustain like indefinite traumas or personality defects that they wouldn't have, you know, otherwise.
Yeah, otherwise from being like over-medicated and like addicted to social media.
Exactly.
I'm just glad that my social media addiction started when I was a fully formed adult and not a developing child.
Amen, sis.
I don't know. But other than that, I have like no hope for a Biden presidency. I think he's going to be so much worse than Trump. And also, really, we're talking about Kamala being so much worse than Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, women should not be politicians.
Then, well, maybe in 2024, we'll get a real fascist.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a real feminist.
Same thing.
Yeah, same, like literally same thing. What was I gonna say about I forgot. I don't even remember. I have nothing to add.
More will be revealed.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not looking good, and it doesn't, yeah, I don't feel particularly relieved that like the Trump derangement syndrome has passed.
Oh, I don't think it has. I think like the impeachment dog and party show will trot on because they need Trump, the media, the politicians. Like, how are they going to kind of like, what are they going to do now that he's gone?
Well,
they need kind of like a monster, like scapegoat opposition. I mean, it's like really crazy. Like
they need to legitimize their like domestic war on terror.
Yeah.
But by scapegoating, think, like mentally ill people.
Yeah. Like mentally ill white men mm-hmm. who were driven to mental illness by their lack of economic opportunity. I mean, again, like I'm like the master of stating the obvious, but it's crazy. Like for the past 5 years, we've had to listen to people incessantly insist that Trump is a racist and a white supremacist. And then we have a guy in power who's done more to expand and exacerbate what we call structural or systemic racism. Mm-hmm. Like there's receipts for this.
Yeah.
And Kamala is like a close second. She's also like not innocent in mm-hmm. this. And that's just like, and then we all have to like kind of pretend it's normal.
I know.
It's like really crazy.
Yeah.
And I don't, I mean, I think that that's
demoralizing.
Yeah. It's like really demoralizing. I don't want to live in like a kind of culture war society where everything becomes like a flashpoint for a race war. Mm-hmm. And I think absent Trump, the next kind of boogeyman becomes this like abstract racial and sexist thing.
But without a figurehead.
Yeah, without it becomes kind of like diffuse.
This like amorphous territorialized threat, yeah. like the threat of terror after 9/11 or something.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it goes hand in hand or whatever.
Should we talk about
the movie
A Promising Young Woman?
Django Unchained.
We watched the new Carrie Mulligan thriller. Did you buy it?
No, I torrented it.
Nice.
I couldn't bear to pay $20 to rent a movie.
Well, I did. I'll pay any price. Emerald Fennell is the director. Carrie mm-hmm. Mulligan stars as a woman who pretends to be drunk to get sort of would-be date rapists to take her home, and then exacts a kind of benign revenge on them.
Yeah.
I guess there will be spoilers, so if you want to hop onto Pirate Bay or whatever and watch it before we talk about it. But I couldn't recommend it, honestly. It was a pretty bad movie.
Yeah.
I feel guilty actually for making you watch it.
No, it's okay. I mean, it took me 5 hours to watch this movie, which is like a little under 2 hours, which I don't know why this needed to be a 2 hour long movie.
I don't know why it needed to be a movie at all.
I know. I agree. Like, this movie could have not been made and it would have not been anticipated or missed or anything.
Well, the first wave of press that it got was after the Variety review, I think it was, where the reviewer said that Carrie Mulligan wasn't hot enough mm-hmm. To play the lead role, which prompted all this kind of backlash about beauty standards in Hollywood, blah blah blah. I really like Carrie Mulligan. I think she's a really good actress. Mm-hmm. I think her accent wasn't quite right in this.
Wait, but really?
That's being a little nitpicky.
Okay. I think you're splitting hairs.
I'm splitting hairs. I have nothing to say about really her performance.
I didn't realize she's British. I didn't know that.
Oh, okay. Maybe because I had the prior knowledge.
Yeah.
And sort of the context, because I've seen her in like Far From the Madding Crowd and in Education and in these like... Mm-hmm. And the director is British as well.
Oh. Oh, my God. That's why it feels like... a weird kind of like uncanny valley version of American culture.
Yeah.
And also the main actor, I was like, he's either gay or British, and I looked him up and
he's both.
He's wasn't either, I think, but but he has a gay British schoolboy vibe. He's kind of like Wildian or Morrissey-ian.
Mm-hmm. Because they needed a kind of non-threatening male lead to serve as a sort of foil for the men that she kind of preys on for her twisted revenge.
Who were also pretty non-threatening, but in a slightly different way.
Right. They're creepy yeah. is the Yeah, that's the thing, is they're all like nice guys
who, yeah,
is the sort of thesis of the,
they all look like podcast listeners to me.
But I think that it's not, what I was gonna say is that I don't think it's that Carey Mulligan wasn't hot enough, and yeah, that someone like a more like Margot Robbie-esque would have been better. I think that really she was just inappropriate and miscast for like the kind of very glossy commercial tone of the film. It's not like, yeah, because it has this uncanny valley kind of like any town USA, which, yeah, I hate movies that take place in just like random American place.
Yeah,
just grow up and set your movie in New York City. Yeah, it's not, it's, she's a very kind of naturalistic actress, yeah, and the movie is not stylistically doing anything bordering on like realism, so she does look kind of like haggard or something, because the context isn't really appropriate for her.
Yeah, I mean, I think Carey Mulligan is well within the bounds of Hollywood beauty standards,
of course,
and she's well within the bounds of that role. Mm-hmm. It's an appropriately cast role. The role, it should not be,
but had the movie been made in more of like I don't know, an artistic or like verite,
yeah,
style, I think she would have just looked much better and more appropriate on screen.
Yeah, I agree with you. She doesn't look polished. It looks like a commercial. Glossy. Yeah, it, yeah, looks like a music video. Yeah. She doesn't look like, you know, she doesn't look appropriately face-tuned or Instagram-faced. I like that she's like a woman who doesn't seem to have any work done and who seems to be aging naturally. Like,
I think she looks great. Yeah.
She looks fine. And like, also, she's not, okay, Carey Mulligan is not like, whatever, the world's most beautiful woman or something, but she's an attractive woman, and she also looks like the type of woman who would be in that type of situation, because she's playing kind of an every woman, right?
Right. Yeah, she's a plausible kind of like girl next door,
yeah,
for the plot, but not the way that the, not for, but not the filmmaking style.
Yeah, I agree. That's a very astute point. And I think more importantly, her talent as an actress, which you notice immediately, was just squandered on that stupid throwaway role. You know, she's, you can actually see that she's like a very good, serious actress. And, mm-hmm, there's a lot of good actors, or at least respected actors in this movie. Like, what's her name? Jennifer Coolidge, who I love.
Yeah.
Like, she's like a great comedy actress. Molly Shannon, who I think is a slightly lesser comedy actress, but kind of a national institution.
Mm-hmm.
Alfred Molina, who's, oh, also, yeah, been around the block.
Also pretty wasted on, yeah, this part.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, Alfred Molina, I don't know much about him. I have no opinion on him, but he's a serious actor who's, yeah, been around forever. And he's like,
he plays her dad actually in An Education.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Maybe they're fucking.
She's married to the guy from Mumford and Sons. And they live in the English countryside.
Oh, why did I think she was married to the guy from that movie that we reviewed by that Jewish playwright guy? Fuck, I'm blanking on this.
What movie?
The one that has like, he has like a new book out, or a newish book that's like a black and white old timey cover. Shit, I forgot.
We reviewed it.
Yeah, it was about like the end of the guy's relationship, and he was also the guy in The Irishman, who was like the son of one of the other guys. This is like, I should cut this part because it's so
incoherent. My mind is blank. But she is married to Mumford.
Okay.
And she's probably, because she's British, is also like a pretty discreet kind of public facing actress.
Yeah, she's like an actual actor and not like a celeb.
Exactly. Yeah.
But
so it comes to light in this film that initially, I guess, the audience is sort of meant to think that she was raped, or something, that something happened to her, that sort of, she was in med school.
Yeah.
She's the character is like lamenting dropping out of med school. and sort of seeking what seems like random revenge on these bad actors. But then it comes to light that actually a friend of hers who she was very close to, a childhood friend of hers who she was close to in med school, was like raped at a party and killed herself.
Yeah, the implication, I think, is that she was so traumatized, she committed suicide. It's her best friend who was like top of her class and like the most promising girl at the school. And she's gang raped at a party. And this is filmed, mm-hmm. it turns out. And the kind of guy who initiates the gang rape becomes like the target of Cassie. Her name is Cassie in the movie, her revenge plot.
Right, but she seeks out also like the lawyer who defended him, played by Albert Molina, as well as like the dean at the school.
Yeah.
But she's very, the film is a very like kind of black and white moral tale and does Carrie Mulligan no real favors.
Yeah.
In terms of character, because she's not kind of morally ambiguous. She doesn't actually seek out actually like violent or vindictive revenge. It's all very, she teaches these men these kind of like benign lessons, basically.
Yeah. And you're led to believe initially that,
that she's like killing them, that she's or killing castrating them, or, yeah. them or something. Yeah.
This was like, this movie was interesting because it had like a mix of like kind of like horror and surrealism and comedy all in one. And it was like a really bad version of an Ari Aster movie that was left on the like cutting room floor, you know. Mm-hmm. It had that kind of vibe, like it's like a kind of it is kind of a new genre that like,
yeah, like a buried A24 yeah. movie,
but like not good enough to make the cut. And there's like a lot of just like implausible scenarios and unnatural acting.
Mm-hmm.
And it was somewhat painful to watch like the actors try to like work their way through it.
Yeah,
a lot of like clipped awkward dialogue. You know, Cassie's like kind of a femme cell, and like, you know, in one scene she forgets her birthday, which like no woman would ever no person would ever forget their own birthday.
Women love their birthdays.
Yeah. And her parents get her like a suitcase, mm-hmm. for her birthday, which is a very heavy-handed metaphor for the fact that she should probably,
that they're disappointed,
yeah, because she's dropped home. And then the entire premise that she drops out to take care of her raped friend who then commits suicide is a little implausible too.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's like just a little too,
it's all just a little neat. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I think like the production, it's like the production value is unintentionally kind of like bad and weird and a mishmash also of like mimetic, like simulac, synchronistic whatever devices. Yeah,
it was very cheap. She works at this like coffee shop that's sort of understated.
Yeah.
That she's like too smart and promising to be working at.
Yeah.
And that's where she meets the male lead who becomes her love interest until she discovers that he was a witness to this gang right back at med school.
Yeah.
Even though it seems like their relationship is going so well and she's really like letting her guard down and learning, yeah. to love again, blah, blah, blah. and then she discovers that the man who raped her friend is getting married and having like a bachelor party,
mm-hmm.
at some remote destination close to this Anytown USA,
mm-hmm.
place where she resides and presumably also went to med school. No one left this town.
Right. They all just went to med school and then got medical jobs in this tiny, economically depressed town.
They went to American med school and then got a job at American Hospital.
Yeah.
And that's really, I think, the weakest point of the movie and why everything else feels so flimsy is because it's not grounded in any real location.
Yeah, it's
not considered and a little bit thoughtless.
Yeah, yeah, they almost left those kind of like the kind of scaffolding, the ligaments they left them to be like an afterthought. They were like, well, let's write out the kind of major like revenge narrative, and then we can leave the kind of details to resolve themselves. And they don't. You have to be very tight about the details. That's like a lot of what good filmmaking is like making sure you tie up loose ends. Mm-hmm. But like the boring stuff, in other words. You know, also, of course, it's like,
write a short story, right? Like a fable, you know, that's like what it aimed to sort of do and failed to.
I mean, this movie is very much like a victim of its own kind of contradictions and incoherence, as most work written by women is. I'm just kidding. No, but it is very indicative of the kind of contemporary liberal feminist mindset. And it does cave under the weight of its own contradictions there, because it really doesn't know what it wants. And it's kind of like, no, I'm serious. Yeah. It's like, it's, you know, Eli said this, but it's very hard to interpret this movie and to see what you're looking at, because there's really kind of like nothing there. Mm-hmm. It's such a kind of non-entity, such a throwaway.
Yeah. It's inviting a sort of like, social commentary backlash on its like kind of fearless feminist misandry portrayal of male, female, heterosexual date rape situations. Yeah. But really not actually doing much.
Right, because it's kind of confused about its own intentions. And like, you know, my take on this is that the whole "is she hot or not" controversy was manufactured to like whip up excitement for a movie that's like very unexciting and probably shouldn't have been made.
Yeah. And you see this with a lot of movies, especially with lib femi agendas, like the Brie Larson, like Captain Marvel. It like, the backlash about Carey Mulligan's hotness made it a sort of like moral imperative to view the film.
Or like the Wonder Woman backlash over Gal Gadot and whether she was appropriately cast. And it's interesting because this is like the movie length version of like when girls say that men don't like strong or intelligent women, you know? And of course, you know, the funniest thing for me was that of course her best friend is a black trans woman who's also her boss.
Right.
So the most important point there, the operative point, is that her friend, her only friend, is her boss, not that she's black or trans. Like, it's so dark. And her boss slash friend,
who's kind of like, gently prodding her to take maybe a more high power position at corporate at this American coffee shop that she works at.
Played by Laverne Cox, of course. She's kind of empowering, but also cracks the whip. But the one thing that this movie was a totally accurate description of was of this kind of like empathy politics thing, of this in-group out-group thing. Like Cassie's character is completely radically empathetic to her perished best friend, so much so that she compromises her own future,
reorients her entire life to seek revenge on her behalf,
but also has zero empathy for or understanding of anyone who's considered part of like the out group or whatever,
the rape culture.
Yeah. And there's a point where
or her own parents even.
Or her parents. Yeah. And it's like, you know, the most disturbing part of this movie for me was not like the kind of rape narrative, but it was like the way that they depicted her relationship with her parents, who are ostensibly loving but actually kind of cold and transactional. Mm-hmm. In a way that was actually pretty unrealistic too. I don't know. Maybe that's how they do in American families.
Yeah. No, well, yeah. Realism was not, I think, a goal of the film.
But yeah, but that's fine. I like movies sometimes that are like hallucinatory or surrealistic. Mm-hmm. But this movie was a lot like Euphoria, if Euphoria was not self-aware, you know? Mm-hmm. It lacked kind of like a conceptual self-awareness, but at the same time, like all millennial led programming, it was deeply kind of rhetorically self-aware. Like all the dialogue is like self-referential and smug. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah, they're quippy, obnoxious, flirting. Yeah. And
just like the last time I did this in a pharmacy was like two weeks ago, like that dialogue where they're like,
yeah, It would have even been a stronger movie if Cassie's character was just a little more had more kind of moral ambiguity, like if she had actually harmed. At one point she abducts basically the dean of the med school's teenage daughter.
Yeah.
And then drops her off somewhere where we don't see, and then she goes and sort of confronts the dean and tells her that she's dropped her daughter off at like a frat where her and her friend presumably were assaulted, whatever. And then once the dean starts to sort of hypocritically panic about her own daughter while callously sort of dismissing the rape accusations from back when Cassie was in med school, she tells her that actually her daughter is safe and sound and she hasn't done anything to harm her.
And she actually says, do you think I'm the type of person who would do that? And it's like, well, how the fuck would the dean know? You're some psycho that like waltzed into her office and threatened her daughter. I mean, like,
right.
How would you know? And she does this to her former classmate, Madison, who witnessed the rape and covered it up or something like this. And like, she takes her out to lunch and gets her really drunk. And then
also just incredible. The alcohol stuff is also very just implausible and unrealistic in the movie, where everyone's sort of getting drunk in the most convenient ways and forgetting the most convenient things, you know.
Yeah. And but she gets this woman drunk and like leaves her in a hotel room with some guy who she hired to spook her, basically. And I think Madison at some point says about Nina, her best friend who was raped and then committed suicide, like, you know, if you have a reputation for getting like blackout drunk and sleeping around, people won't believe you because you're like the boy who cried wolf. And apparently a statement like this is supposed to be so kind of horrifying and immoral and beyond the pale. And it's just like a social fact. You don't have to agree with it. I mean, I think it's sad. And I think there are many exceptions, but there's a reason why people have kind of a coherent view of reality that that permits this idea. Like,
yeah, right. And so after she spooks this Madison character into believing that she may have been raped while actually being unharmed, that somehow motivates her to give her the recording of her friend's gang rape.
Yeah, where
she had held on to for decades.
Yeah. On an iPhone.
No, it's like a flip. It's like an older model phone. Oh, okay. But
it's like a BlackBerry. That's what it was.
Charger still works.
Yeah, which she then, mails to the lawyer. But yeah, but it's not like a value judgment. It's just a description of reality. This is the thing too. It's like, you know, my feeling about it has always been, as I've said on this pod, that like, sexual liberation comes with personal responsibility, right? And it involves some taking on of risk and ambiguity.
Yeah.
And it's like sometimes
the stuff actually that makes movies interesting.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, the problem with American feminism is in a nutshell is that I've said this like a million times, is that the American feminists think they want equality, but what they really want is special treatment. And there's nothing wrong with special treatment. And I think that women should be given special treatment in certain areas and scenarios. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I was like tweeting about this thing that another friend of the pod posted on Instagram about how allegedly Moscow police are being instructed to round up two women with every group of protesters they arrest. And I was like, well, yeah, because Russians understand they meaningfully understand the implications of feminism. Like, you want equality, you got it, babe. You get rounded up and thrown in the truck. And that's not to say that I like appreciate or condone it. I think I think women being roughed up and arrested is much worse than men being roughed up and arrested. I don't agree with it, but that's what equality implies.
Right.
And like, you know, I think like you have to be completely like clear with yourself on that notion.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, like, of course, this movie is so kind of like fawning over, like, it's so misguided, and it's fawning over like credentialism and meritocracy, right? Because this takes place, it's like a classic post Me Too movie, because it takes place among med students,
mm-hmm.
and not like Home Depot laborers
or maids,
or like McDonald's, like burger assemblers,
right?
Because that would be a boring movie, right?
You know, the stakes have to be high, yeah. Which was her promising career as a doctor.
Yeah, and actually at one point she says that she's mad. I think she tells Al, the main assailant, that she's mad that she and Nina had to drop out of medical school because of this incident.
Mm-hmm.
And you went on to graduate summa cum laude.
Right.
And it's like, what, you're not mad that your best friend's body was violated, that something like deeply psychologically and physically traumatic happened to her?
Well, she clearly is. That's, well, she why is, she, but that's why she targets also random would be date rapists.
But this is, but it, the way that it's expressed is through this very kind of like zero sum kind of credentialist mode, right?
Right.
That's like a lot of what those Me Too allegations were.
Of course.
Well, he has a career as an alt-lit poet and I don't.
Yeah,
it's like that kind of thing. And when people make those kind of allegations, you can tell that they have no skin in the game and that they're not really serious about the kind of gravity of the situation itself.
Well, that's why Me Too was spearheaded by like premenopausal actresses who had previously used their sexuality and sexual power to advance their careers, and then just sort of in a very calculated way capitalized on Me Too,
yeah,
as a way of continuing to leverage their sexual power, but in like a twisted and backwards way.
Yeah, like in an inverted way.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, I think like this movie was really sad and horrifying because it was like an aborted revenge fantasy, and it could have been better if, I think it would have been better if she actually was like, as you said, like killing these guys.
Yeah.
It would have been better as a slasher.
Right. Or if she had even, yeah, like killed or castrated someone who maybe didn't intend to date rape her, or just had done something kind of morally complicated or less convenient or less clear, or just was less everything that the characters just sort of has this like unblighted, she's like Taylor Swift, she's like, yeah, purely virtuous,
yeah,
and she's not like a full human being,
yeah, and she's like horrific and monstrous in her virtue,
yeah.
And I think the ending of the movie is like totally also like bizarre and incoherent because she gets strangled by
she dresses up like a stripper
like a furry,
like a nurse, yeah, kind of Harley Quinn style stripper, and goes to the bachelor party and then ties up the bachelor who raped her friend and then is like going to cut him up or something.
Mm-hmm.
With her medical tools, and yeah, he ends up breaking free of the furry handcuffs and like strangling her to death. And then they dispose of her body, thinking that once again they've gotten away with assaulting and ruining a woman's life. But she's sort of already enacted these motions that play out in the police arriving at the wedding to arrest the...
Yeah, I mean, it's a very bleak view of like women and feminism that we're actually often accused of entertaining, which I reject also that we do. But she sets up this entire entrapment scenario over many months or years or whatever it is. And then when this guy retaliates to save his own life, I mean, that's the other thing. If you want a zero-sum game between men and women, then you can expect men to retaliate in a zero-sum way,
mm-hmm,
and not give you any kind of benefits or concessions that you deserve, I think, as a woman.
Right. Which everyone else does. presumably she keeps like a little notebook where she keeps tallies of every time she does this stunt, which she's done like hundreds of times in this presumably small town.
Yeah. And nobody remembers that one blonde girl who looks like the Vegas era Britney Spears.
Yeah.
And is like hanging out with her high pony and like trapping men into weird situations.
And the implication is that all of these men were sort of let off with a stern, hard-learned lesson about preying on drunk women.
Which they didn't learn, probably, and were, like, back at the bar the next day.
Yeah.
I forgot. I also like how their Facebook thing was called Friender. That was a funny
point. That's always a good trope when someone has to go on the computer in a movie and use, like, a fake Google search engine to move the plot along.
But even, like, you know, she, even as, like, the ultimate victim, and only as the ultimate victim can she hold the reins on her power, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's like, also why, nothing she does she can't really be condemned for any of her actions because they don't result in actual real bodily or material harm.
Right.
So she's just kind of a pure protagonist in a way that's very boring.
Yeah, I like that, pure protagonist. But it boring, but also unattractive and off-putting.
Yeah.
Like, she's a bad character that you can't sympathize with.
But I think you're meant to.
Find her unappealing.
Meant to find her sympathetic and sort of see the underlying virtue in everything that she does.
Yeah, in seeking revenge through victimhood, which is just very also, like, wrong-headed and misguided. I mean, she would have been better off just finishing her medical school and becoming a successful doctor and stacking chips and, like,
well, the best revenge is a life well lived.
Yeah, as Joan Didion would probably say, actually.
And then rubbed in your haters' faces.
Yeah, totally. She would have been better off working on that BMI. Mm-hmm. But it's funny because this movie, like, literally has it, like, embodies everything that's, like, disgusting about American culture, which is, like, this kind of, it's like revenge, credentialism, and like furries, like cosplay.
Yeah.
Like that outfit
poorly
that
styled
dons at the end. Yeah. I also I hated all the outfits. They were very,
she dresses like a slut to go to the club, and then she dresses like kind of, a gammon, like little girl. She wears like ribbons in her hair in the day.
She dresses like that trad meme.
Yeah, exactly.
Like literally that. It's like a cornflower blue floral dress, button down and a belted waist with like white sneakers, not heels. I mean, it was just like very on the nose.
Yeah.
Like basically it did this thing that a lot of kind of like millennial logic does where like they make up a story or stereotype and then
get mad about it.
Yeah, and get mad about it and think it's like the reality.
Well, also another example of that is the Al, the rapist, who's at the top of her revenge list, is getting married to like a bikini model. Mm-hmm. And when she goes on his Facebook, he's like very profuse about his love and respect for his bikini model fiance. Mm-hmm. And then when she shows up at the bachelor party, he's very reticent to even like entertain a stripper. And the idea is sort of that he's reformed in this shallow way for the right kind of woman, you know, but women who get like blackout drunk, say, are like are not worthy of sort of the out-group's respect and honor.
Yeah. Or it's even worse than that. Women who are intellectual and strong, you know?
Yeah.
Which is just, you know, that's a bullshit myth that only exists in the mind of Jezebel feminists.
Yeah, this is a realm.
And this is crucial. Who are not necessarily aging out of desirability, but who secretly believe they are and have to make it a crusade, you know, like a political or moral crusade.
Yeah.
It's like, this is all in everybody. It's like in your head, you know, all of these stereotypes. And also these stereotypes are like 4 years old. they're not exactly kind of like
the Anna Merlin story.
Yeah, somebody should make a documentary.
In her leather jacket,
standing in a graveyard. This is,
yeah, well,
this is like a movie that like Jezebel writers would make if they could make a movie.
Yeah, completely.
Do you ever fantasize about making a really horrible movie on purpose?
No, God, no.
I thought of it. I thought it would be so much fun to do like a truly,
well, some people might think I did make a very horrible movie.
Well, no one's seen it yet. So
yeah, remains to be seen. I'm looking at Emerald Fennell's directing credits. This is her first feature.
Okay.
Oh, she's an actress.
She's like the Sally Rooney of cinema.
Oh, and she, there's a scene where Carey Mulligan is doing her makeup and she's watching like a blowjob lips tutorial video on YouTube. And that's a director cameo.
Oh.
But when I saw that part, I went on YouTube and I was like, are there blowjob lip like YouTube tutorials? No. Because I wanted to see one.
Yeah. It's a little too edgy and risque.
I'm interested.
Yeah.
In how to make myself look convincingly like a blow-up doll.
I saw a really fantastic makeup tutorial that was like on that Russian Instagram parody account. That it was like a hot Russian girl who put a vacuum cleaner on her lips and like sucked them out until they looked like they were like had fillers. It was crazy because she just like vacuumed technique. Like pumped her lips.
I've seen girls on YouTube doing it with eyelash curlers, like clamping an eyelash curler down on your top and bottom lips to basically like bruise and swell them.
Yeah, I love that. That's so industrious. I love when people are like ingenious, you know, in there.
Yeah, you're like, well, what if I put my mouth in here?
Yeah, I don't know. My grandpa always used to say, of course, my grandpa, not my grandma, among other things, that if you want to get like a natural rosy glow, you could put beets on your face.
Russians love putting that. Mayonnaise and beets and honey and stuff.
Yeah, like love. Making home masks. Yeah. And oatmeal.
My grandma puts mayonnaise on her face.
Wait, really? Does it help?
I mean,
it's probably pretty moisturized.
Yeah, I'm sure it's like putting like olive oil or something on your face too. It probably has some properties.
Yeah, totally. The same grandpa also told me not to read too much because I'd get wrinkles.
Smart. That's why you've only read one book.
I read three. One was like a glossy magazine.
I thought you were gonna say for a rosy glow to slap yourself in the face.
That's what you get a boyfriend for. You have to provoke him. I have to stop. I'm so tired of doing these fucking canned he hit me and it felt like a kiss jokes.
You don't have to.
I don't have to. I just like compulsively do. They're not even that funny.
You have Tourette's.
Yeah. My new pivot is going to be just like making that same joke over and like Biden posting enthusiastically. And it'll be really bad and annoying. I'm just going to drive everyone away from me.
You have to change your Twitter, Abby, to like a picture of you smirking
in a fedora, like
heavily face-tuned.
Yeah. Oh, like MRAZ or whatever. What's the deal with that account? Everybody hates it, but I think it's entertaining because it's so ridiculous and fake.
She's a freak. Yeah, she's probably an op or something.
Yeah, you can't get mad at an account like that. It's not a real person.
No.
What else happens in this shitty 2-hour-long movie? That sucks that it's this woman's directorial debut. I mean, she'll probably get invited to make another film.
I think for sure. Well, she's an actress.
Yeah, she'll be fine.
Actors, it can go very wrong sometimes when actors get on the other side of the camera.
I wonder, but
it's not necessarily in their skill set.
Does this movie have a Rotten Tomatoes?
Probably. Yeah, I wonder how the reviews are. I think the reviews are mostly favorable, with the exception of the Variety one that
I understand
that mentioned Mulligan's hotness.
I understand why they would be favorable. I get it.
Yeah, it's very, it's like focus grouped to sort of.
91% on the tomato meter and 88% audience score. That's like beyond favorable. But I understand why. It's like, I think the only movies that should win an Oscar now are really shitty movies.
I mean, that's how it's been for a while. Yeah,
but I think we need to like codify that as official dogma.
She writes on Killing Eve.
What's that?
It's a TV show. It's not bad, actually. Margot Robbie produced it.
Oh, that's why. Well, why didn't she star in it? Because she knew
she's
it was
busy. She's got a lot on
career
her plate.
Career suicide.
Yeah. No, I'm sure it'll do well and be, you know, well regarded.
Yeah, but also like a drop in the bucket. Mostly due to the fact that it's COVID and not because it's even a bad movie.
Right. But it was released theatrically. We could have gone to Jersey to see it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad we didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew it was going to be bad. I don't know why I invited this on ourselves.
Yeah.
My bad.
No, it's okay.
Just seemed up our alley.
No, this was like, this was a pretty decent film to scroll Instagram to. I was just like,
yeah,
you know, going down the TL, pausing periodically.
I was drinking. I actually don't remember what Molly Shannon.
A cameo. I actually don't know what character. I think maybe she played like Nina's mom or something. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, or older sister or something. I remember now.
They were like they had a heart sitting on a porch. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was like very HGTV-esque.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Anyway, yeah. Do you have anything to add?
No, I think that's it. I guess we'll see you.
And we'll see you in hell.